Welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the founder and editor of Mark to Market website, one website that I go to on a very regular basis. And Mark, I want to just quickly discuss some of the reasons, or at least the reasons that people are using to explain why the U.S. markets have started to drop off at the tail end of this week. It, again, all deals with trade and the lack of any clarity, and now the expectation that no deal will be done by that kind of drop-off, true state that China and the U.S. had set about 2 months ago now, 2.5 months ago now. What do you think? Is this a reasonable excuse? Is this why the markets are dropping off?
Well, I think that, you know, we've had an incredible run in the stock market. I was looking for the S&P 500 to get to 2,700. That was a retracement level I was looking at. We surpassed it a little bit, but the market is very stretched. And we saw on Thursday the stock market, the S&P 500, gapped lower and followed through lower before the weekend. I think this is just a normal sort of correction noise in the market. They obviously don't go straight up. I think the focus on trade is a bit misleading. We really didn't get really anything new news this week. I think that what we should all know, and information set is one, is that the U.S. and China, our talks are continuing. Two, the two sides, I mean, the U.S.'s demands on China are pretty serious. They're requiring China to give up its industrial development strategy that has lifted more people out of poverty than anything else in the last 30 or 40 years. And so China, of course, reluctant to give up everything in the face of U.S. demands. And so, of course, these talks are going to go to the wire. So I think that it's my best advice to investors is if you're trying to explain a short-term price action, like 2 days worth of declines in the stock market, it might not always make sense to jump to structural reasons. Short-term moves, I try to align with short-term causes. Longer-term moves, and what is a longer-term move? I think the longer-term move in the stock market, we had a sell-off in December, we've bounced back, and I'd say the stock market is still within a few percentage points of a record high. So we look back at this, we're still at relatively lofty levels for the stock market, and I just don't think that we want to explain every small little profit-taking move or some kind of losses as being a systemic thing. But we stopped at the 200-day moving average in the S&P 500. That's kind of important. As you remember, on the way up, the stock market often found support at the 200-day moving average, and now it's finding resistance there. So it does seem to be a change of tone, but this doesn't mean that the U.S. is going to hell in a handbasket. I think that a lot of the fourth quarter stories that people are saying, in addition to trade, is that weaker global growth, and I think that is primarily a fourth quarter story. And as we get further into first quarter, we'll see some of the signs of the stimulus, some of the signs of the drop in interest rates paying off, having some positive impact on the major economies.
Now, Mark, can you also discuss the kind of direction of this snapback rally that we had when the S&P, let's say, dropped the whole way down to its 200-week moving average? It had five out of 6 weeks of straight upward move, so very much a V-shaped type recovery, and it got back to some of these other technical levels that you have said. What are your comments about when you see that steep of a decline and then that steep of a recovery in such a short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it just amazing? I mean, you know, we talk oftentimes about what kind of bottom it can have, where it could be like a bottom where it just stays in its trough for a while, a W-shaped bottom has a retest the lows. But here we had a case of a V-shaped bottom, and this is one of the things that I think is a challenge. We want policymakers to be sensitive to market moves. And so it makes sense policymakers should take it seriously, but how seriously can we get policymakers to take it when it's so volatile and fickle like this? In December, the U.S. couldn't do anything right. And here in January, global stocks, even on poor earnings, they rallied. So I just think this is I think for investors, especially retail investors, it's important to understand and know your time frame. If you're a day trader, that's fine. You want to take advantage of all these little moves. But if you're an investor, an average person trying to invest in and preserve your savings from your hard work, I think that you want to try to look past some of this noise and volatility. And that's why one of the rules we have would be being a value investor, so that you buy things and you can hold on when the markets do silly things, because you've got conviction of the underlying value of your investment, as opposed to sort of the greater fool theory. I hope someone's silly enough to buy this asset from me. Value investing, longer term, sleep better at night.
Yeah, that's something that we do try to preach, but hey, it can be overwhelming with these day-to-day moves, especially with this high volatility and when headlines drive the market. But that's also something that we hadn't really seen much of in the last, let's say, well, after the Fed meeting, was a lot of headlines, and then they perked up again kind of at the tail end of this week. What's your strategy when you totally understand that headlines do drive markets, at least right now, but again, trying to stick to that long-term picture, how do you try to isolate what is important and what really isn't?
That's a good question. I think that one of the differences between retail investors and institutional investors, I think, is that institutional investors want deeper pockets so they can withstand some greater volatility than people like you or me. Secondly, I'd say that to, again, try to stay true to your time frame. So if you've got money put away for retirement, does it really matter a 25 basis point move in interest rates or quarterly earnings that are a couple pennies better or worse than expected? I think it's really trying to, sort of what they tell people in the U.S. when they're driving, when they're being taught to drive, they say aim high in your steering. Don't aim for right in front of your car, but aim for down the block a bit. And I think the same thing true is if you're trying to think about the short-term movements, think about the short-term drivers like market positioning or expectations, headlines. But if you're not playing that game, if you're an active trader, but you're not playing the day-to-day game, but you're maybe a couple times a month, I think that you can look past a lot of this noise and just think about what are the real drivers, what are the things that change your views on value. And I think that some of these things we should just come to appreciate, like trade talks between the U.S. and China are going to be prolonged. They're going to be stretched to the last minute. Same thing with Brexit in the U.K. At the end of March right now, they could kick the can down a bit further, but we shouldn't expect a decision in February because if you have a decision in February, it means neither side got the best deal they could get. How do you know you got the best deal you can get is when you go all the way to the very end and you're still bickering or still debating over, you know, trying to express your interests. And so I think that a lot of these games, so to speak, have continued and evolving, but we're not quite there at the decision-making. And what I find is, young men typically more likely to try to, like, skip rungs in an escalation ladder. So, for example, in the UK, May and, say, Parliament are having a dispute, and people would expect that the last rung of the ladder, some kind of a lack of confidence or something, but they tend to like skip steps, and they want to go to the very end. And I think we need to be patient as investors and try to avoid jumping rungs in the escalation ladder. There's sort of process and procedures that sort of have to play out, and it takes a little while to play out.
So one theme that seems to be very prevalent as well, kind of continuing on with this idea of focusing on what actually matters, is continued weak data out of Europe and yields falling in Europe. You pointed out to me that the German yields up to 9 years are all negative right now, and that obviously also holds down U.S. yields. It's one reason why those really haven't been moving at all after that Fed meeting. What do you think about that continued story of weak European data, which then impacts different markets in the U.S., which includes yields and even the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that, so I look around the world in these big pockets. I say, yeah, China is slowing, but China is taking almost a new stimulative measure almost every day. So I would imagine there'll be a payoff, at least by the end of Q1, we're beginning to see signs that the Chinese economy would stabilize. Same thing I think we'll see in the U.S. The U.S. economy slowed down from above 4% growth in the middle of last year, and it's probably slowing towards a trend growth of something of, say, 2 to 2.5%. Europe, though, has nothing for it. The German economy has contracted in Q3. It looks like it barely escaped another contraction in Q4. Italy contracted the last two quarters of 2018 and off to a weak start in 2019. So I think and Europe doesn't have a sense of the stimulus. They don't really want to provide more fiscal stimulus because of their budget commitments. So I'm worried about Europe, but I think even there, two shocks that have hit Europe. One is this restructuring of the auto sector having to do with the primarily a German phenomenon, but of course those cars are made in a number of different countries. But so the auto sector, and already we see from the factory orders in Germany that the auto sector has begun rebounding. the second source of weakness. And remember, a lot of these European countries, they run trade surpluses. That is, they borrow some of the country's aggregate demand. Which country's aggregate demand have they been borrowing? China. And as China has slowed down, we've seen the export sectors in Europe get hit. So I'm thinking that it's true that the auto sector is a little improving. It might take a little bit more, a little while longer to get the external sector improving. But we saw the December German trade figures at the end of last week, and we saw both exports and imports rise. I know 1 month is not sufficient, but I think that this is the general direction that I would agree with you. Europe remains our weak sister, but the other pockets, other major centers can grow, and I think that we're going to see that. I think we're going to see that come the end of Q1, early Q2.
All right. So, in terms of maybe short-term drivers or short-term stories that we will be hearing next week or even the following week, what are you going to be watching most closely that you think will actually matter in the big picture?
Well, I'm going to be watching what we get from next week, the U.S. CPI and retail sales. I think we're going to see that the U.S. consumer, when you strip away autos and gasoline, the U.S. consumer is still alive and well and a healthy part of the driving the U.S. economy. And core inflation is going to probably remain firm near 2%. So I think this is going to keep the people talking about a Fed rate cut at bay. And I'll be watching what the UK does whether the Parliament has a vote next week or later in February. And then, of course, China comes back after a week-long holiday for the Lunar New Year. And they've got a lot of economic data as well as these trade talks.
So, Mark, nothing has been decided or big picture things have been decided. There's still a lot of questions about different economies, health, trade talks still ongoing with very little idea of how they're going to play out. Markets right now seem very much confused and right in the middle of this new range that they're just putting in. What can you summarize for the investor here that you think really matters?
Yes, I'd say that in near term, I'd say keep your gunpowder dry, lack of transparency, lack of progress on these big picture issues. But in the coming weeks, maybe a little bit longer, I think the picture will clarify. We'll get a clarified trade. We'll get a clarification on the U.S. government shutdown that might be pending, the debt ceiling, and the Iranian oil embargo, whether we lift those exemptions again. And so I think that this is it's a difficult time, especially after we've given that V-shaped recovery we talked about. I would just say keep my powder dry, waiting for clearer opportunities.
All right, Mark, great chatting with you again. Mark Chandler, go check out his website, Mark to Market. I will post a link below this interview. Great having you on the show, Mark. Thanks for spending some time with us on Friday, and have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.